Do I win any grilled meat or anything?
Do you remember the wheel of meat we used to do?
Yeah. The wheel of meat. Spin the wheel of meat.
Well, remember, and then would run, it'd land on, and then we'd have a mysterious voice come from out of nowhere. Roast.
Actually, I want some of that prime rib. You know, roast comes up too often.
I was going to say, they would put the roast on there like every third.
A ground chuck.
Ground chuck would get on there every third.
Ground up hot dog. And my favorite, what we killed at the transmitter site.
Welcome to You Are the Guest, a weekly show where you can be the guest and tell people what you and your friends and neighbors think about news events and issues of the day. It's part talk show, part opinion poll, part reality show, and a whole lot of fun. And it's completely dependent upon your participation as a guest. To be considered as a guest for a future show, check out the website at www.youaretheguest.com for details. Now here is your program host, Bill Grady.
Greetings from the great city of Fort Dodge, Iowa, and welcome to show number 64 of You Are the Guest, the show where we talk to everyday people just like you and me about their lives and about the issues of the day. Our guest today joins us from Nashville, Tennessee, Jeremy Borash. Welcome to You Are the Guest.
Well, it's an honor to be. I know you've been counting down and waiting for the moment to get up to number 64. We have finally reached the milestone, and I couldn't be more honored to be your 64th guest.
Jeremy, tell our listeners about yourself.
I was born in Minneapolis. I spent a good deal of time in Fort Dodge, I believe 4 years to be exact. I was hired on my 19th birthday to come to Fort Dodge. And spent a number of years there working in radio. And through that, ended up back in Minneapolis and was able to do a wrestling radio show at a station there, and through that I got to meet a bunch of wrestling people, and lo and behold, 2 years later I'm in Atlanta writing a show that's on TBS and on TNT, and one of the top three, I think, at the time, rated cable shows in America. So kind of went into the from the frying pan into the fire there, and enjoyed a good number of years working for Ted Turner's WCW in Atlanta, and from there I moved and just basically got into wrestling, and I've been doing wrestling literally all over the world since then. So it's something I never really intended to get into, it just kind of fell into, and have been enjoying quite a, well, it's a very unusual life, and a life where no day is the same, that's for sure.
And we should fess up, we know each other because you worked for me as our morning man and my operations director for KVFD and KUEL.
The four greatest, as far as a learning experience and getting out and where I honed my skills under the tutelage of a very bright man, yes, the 4 years in Fort Dodge working for Cool 92 at the time and KVFD. And, boy, yeah, that was a very big growing time in my life. I think I learned more in those 4 years than I could have ever learned anywhere else, just getting out there and finding out what this was really all about. In some ways, still, it was more not about doing radio necessarily, but it was more about being involved in the community and finding out how important that is and learning relationships and different things. So it was more, not necessarily a radio job, it was more of a career I would say career look at how you conduct yourself and how to be respected and respectful of others and dealing with that. So I think it was a learning experience. It was so much more than a job to me. And I think looking back at those 4 years working for you, Bill, I think it was, obviously I think I learned more in that time than I ever have anywhere else.
And I want to ask you some more questions about that. But first I want to find out about professional wrestling. What should people know about professional wrestling?
Professional wrestling, I think, is probably looked at in some of the same circles as everyone's got an opinion. It's certainly a polarizing industry. People either love it and are fanatical about it, or couldn't care less and don't want anything to do with it. To the people who do love it and are fanatical about it, they understand what it is. We're not, for many years, up into the 80s, it was portrayed as something that was real and people were trying to sell something that was obviously not real. And I think that's where the reputation got. Now, I think these days it is a completely different industry. It is a industry based on, at least in the company I work for, based on athleticism, good storytelling, and incredible ratings. We routinely beat most anything else in our time slot. So whether or not it is viewed upon as a highbrow form of entertainment, maybe not necessarily, but to the advertisers and to the masses, it's Shakespeare to the masses. It really is. There's no other form of entertainment like that in the world. And for guys, it's been called a male soap opera. I think it's much more than that because there are, in many cases, just as many females watching. So it's just really, it's an unclassifiable form of sports entertainment. It really is everything. It's athleticism, it's entertainment, it's drama, it's comedy. It's really an open canvas, and we paint some very unique pictures and get to do that. So it's that's the enjoyment of it. It's just, there's no limits to it. There really isn't.
I think the thing that surprised me the most when you first started telling me about professional wrestling was that the shows are written. And for some reason, I just thought that was just all ad lib.
Well, the key to getting the wrestlers to be great performers is to getting them to be polished at ad libbing. For instance, a lot of the wrestlers can go out there and you don't need to give them very much direction. Just tell them, hey, this is where we need you to go. This is what, when you're telling, we're basically setting up scenarios for people to want to see the two combatants go at it. And in some ways, if it's done on a very slow, methodical pace, for instance, we're doing a pay-per-view on the 19th of November and a matchup that we've been building to for a number of months versus two guys that you just see go out on a television. There's a lot of meticulous scripting to when and where. You got to remember, too, we are no different in the sense of a television production than 24 or Lost. We have storylines and we have twists and turns and reasons. We have to make you want to come back and watch again. And simply putting two guys out there and letting them beat the crap out of each other doesn't necessarily do that. There's got to be a reason, and there's got to be a reason for you to want to come back and watch. And that's our goal as writers and producers of the show. You know, we got to make a reason for you to want to come back the next week and see what happens.
Do you have a lot of people knocking on your doors applying to become professional wrestlers?
You would be surprised. It's something that a high amount of people think they can do, actually, when in reality, you know, it's easier to get a job in the NBA than to get a job in professional wrestling for a living.
So what do you look for other than a physique?
Well, these days, physiques are probably way down there on the list. Obviously, you've got to look polished, but our number one drawing act right now is and I say act meaning talent, number one drawing wrestler is a guy who is Samoan and, you know, does not look the part. And that's what's so appealing about him is he's not a muscled-up freak. You know, he is just a what would they call a ground-and-pound submission expert. He's very much of a UFC-type fighter. So he's, his body is not appealing. He's a bigger, larger Samoan guy.
Are you talking about Samoa Joe?
Samoa Joe, exactly. See, you've been watching, Bill. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
The guy he's going up against in this big matchup I was kind of talking about is an Olympic gold medalist. You've got two ends of the spectrum there. Now, those two obviously are great athletes. The people that want to get into it are generally guys that may tend to be overzealous fans sometimes, and they find their place. But a lot of times it takes an incredible amount of athleticism, an incredible amount of pain threshold you've got to be able to have. To do that every night and to maintain that kind of physique at the same time. And it also takes a lot of charisma. And so if you can do those three things, I can count them on one hand, the amount of people that I met for the first time and said, you definitely have what it takes, and they were able to go ahead and do that. A lot of times, you know, I could spot them pretty far away if they have what it takes or not. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people, the amount of people that have what it takes to get into it, very, very, very few people actually make it.
Any disturbing auditions you could share with us?
Well, you know what? I would maybe throw on the opposite spectrum of things. A lot of times we have, the popularity of females on the program has increased a lot, and we do have a lot of female wrestlers. That happens a lot. Gals will come up and say they, want to be wrestling, and they probably should.
They should just be on the Jerry Springer show instead.
No, I was going to say nobody wants to see them in tight clothing. I guess, but obviously that goes for both, definitely for both sides. So when you got a guy who's, 450 pounds, hasn't been in the gym, and doesn't even know what a gym looks like. Those tend to be the more comedic side of things, where they, hey, can I be a wrestler? We run into that all the time. So, it's pretty amazing. Then again, you run into a lot of celebrities who think they can do it too. And
oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, certainly. Yeah, we've had a lot of wrestlers that, or a lot of celebrities that have come by the show, and hey, I want to give it a shot. Brian Urlacher from the Bears came by, and he got involved in a match. He did okay for himself.
How about Hillary Clinton?
We could try that. I think she could probably, she could probably scrap pretty well with how she's controlled.
She could just stare him down.
If she can handle her husband, she can certainly handle some of our guys, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know if she's handling the husband real well.
probably not. At least keep from, doing damage. So maybe she would be a good, behind the scenes type of gal.
What's the funniest thing that's happened to you while you were taping a show?
There's been several things that have happened. The very first time I was to be on national television, the very first time, I was out in the crowd, I was going to do a live stand-up, basically. They were going to count me down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're on, and you got to start talking. So the very first, my big opportunity, I literally have 10 minutes warning, too, by the way, because the guy I'm filling in for, his wife had just gone into labor. So the wife goes into labor. I get the call. I said, you got to be on in 10 minutes. I'm out in the middle of the crowd, very, very nervous, obviously, and don't have a clue as to what I'm doing. And about 5 seconds, I get the countdown, 5, 4, and at 3, which is literally the last thing I remember, I get hit in the back of the head with a bottle. And I should have been knocked out. Somehow, through the grace of God, I was able to maintain control and keep my head on straight. I was so nervous. I think a freight train could have came through there and I'd have got up and done it just because I was so nervous. But yeah, my first time on TV, I'm pretty much dazed and confused for the first 5-10 seconds I was on. I got my head together, but that happened. That was pretty interesting.
Did you ever find out who did it?
No. They were. It was in the crowd somewhere, so it was just a random act of hurling debris at the talent. So that happens. That happens sometimes.
Well, please accept my apologies. I was trying to aim for the other guy.
I saw you there, Bill, and I was curious about that. I made a few phone calls, and you checked out clean. Obviously, my sources aren't good enough.
Hey, do wrestlers talk much about politics? Are they worldly in many shapes, or are they just kind of just hunks of meat?
It varies. It varies. You've got some that are brilliant. You've got a few guys that actually... We've had a couple guys that are on Fox News Channel and Geraldo and different stuff like that. So I think maybe that's the novelty of having professional wrestlers who actually know what they're talking about in politics and college degrees and whatnot. But, obviously there are ones that fall on the other side of that completely. But I think you'll find a lot of wrestlers are the ones who have opinions are very, very opinionated. And don't even try and come up with an argument with them because you'll lose. It's one of those things. So, as far as the wrestling business itself, probably more of a blue state than a red state.
Are they talking about John Kerry's attempt on telling a joke?
And what a job that he did, huh? No, I don't think they're talking about that. I think they're probably talking about where they can get their next. 40, 50 grams of protein in the next meal. That's probably what they're more concerned with.
So politics really isn't a big thing on the agenda.
No, I think they're worried about when their next flight out, when they get to go home. A lot of these guys are on the road 25 days a month. So, and I've done that, and once you get into that realm of just where's the next town, I've more than one occasion woke up in a city not knowing where I was. and not due to any activities of the previous evening. It just it gets very monotonous where, you know, it's wake up, get on the bus, or wake up, get on the plane, go to the next town, do the show, go to bed, go back to the hotel. You know, so I think a lot of the guys, just due to the lifestyle, aren't able to really keep close tabs on what's going on.
In other words, you wake up looking for hotel pins to find out what the address is.
I have literally, in the last year, woke up and had to look over at my phone to see what the area code was or where the hotel was I was staying in.
Now, you've traveled around the country. You've traveled around the world. What was your favorite country to visit?
I have a pretty interesting story about that, and I'll tell you why. My favorite country to visit, I spent most of 2001 in Australia and toured Australia extensively. I've been in every corner of that country several times and was actually there. I was supposed to fly home on the morning. Actually, it was the morning after. It was about midnight when it happened, but when September 11th went down, I was in Melbourne, Australia. And I was there with a wrestler named Bret the Hitman Hart, who's a very famous guy, and he's a big famous Canadian wrestler. And so we were told, again, this happened at midnight there. We were watching it on TV overseas, obviously from our hotel rooms, but we were all set to head back the next morning. So I was supposed to be on one of the first flights, what would have been the first flight the next morning. We were told at that point, just stay in your hotel room. The guy who was employing us to be there just said, I'm not getting you out on any flights anytime soon. Stay in the hotel, we'll pay for your meals, and I'll get you on the first flight out I can. So that's September 11th. The outpouring of support and local news came over. The newspapers did stories on these American wrestlers stranded in Australia. And because their prime minister at the time was in the Pentagon when September 11th went down, the public there was kind of, has a real connection to the United States. And I think we became their way to show support in their own way. And we had people bringing us food. I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of people that showed up at the hotel once these news stories aired that the American wrestlers were stranded in Melbourne was unbelievable. I've never felt that kind of love from people before. It was unbelievable.
We have a good-sized audience from Australia, and we've done a number of shows with guests from Australia. And I'm always impressed on how kind and generous the people are.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I really would be living there right now if the current company hadn't started up that I'm working for back in 2002. I would still be there. I spent, and people in Australia will know this, but I spent numerous, probably about a month at the Crown Casino right there in Melbourne. That's where we were staying. And had a great time, and just I couldn't believe it. And so it was kind of a, I don't want to say bittersweet, but it was very surreal because while all this was going on in my home country, I was feeling so much support to the point where it's, you're almost on a high because you're just getting all this attention and people are just showing all so much love for you. But at the same time, you turn on the TV and see what's going on back home. So it was a really weird week to be there. But I have since that time gone back. I think I've been back 7 or 8 times to Australia since. And I love that country and love the people. They're just so friendly.
Let's go back to your early broadcast days. What things do you remember about your days in Fort Dodge, Iowa?
Wow, so many, so many things. I remember just growing as an on-air talent, and I luckily had a good boss there to kind of guide me along and tell me what I was doing right and what I was doing wrong.
Oh, and who was that?
That would have been you, sir.
Oh, okay.
Every step of the way. And so I had a good coach, and while I think I was a pretty good air talent, I think anybody needs a good coach, even more importantly, and I think I had a good coach there. So what I remember about it is doing things like Fall Fest, remote broadcasts at JCPenney, being outside of Clement Crossroads, being out, there are just so many great things that we would do and how many different ways we'd come up with. There were really no limits to what we would do. If we wanted to, I remember a couple times we did our show from the school bus when kids would be going into school, just the amount of variety and things we tried to do to make that a community-based morning show, and I think we did very well at it together to kind of sculpt our idea of what it would be, how we reach this community and how we go out there. I mean, looking back at it now and seeing how a lot of radio is run and where the business has gone since that time, that's something I think is just so desperately missing. It needs to be, you know, as far as the local side of radio, it's become, in many, you know, especially in the bigger markets, something completely different. And I think going back there, just knowing that that may be an era of broadcasting that may have been, you know, put by the wayside for whatever reason, but just the hands-on, face-to-face, shaking hands, getting out there and meeting the people kind of radio is what I remember and will always enjoy about Fort Dodge. And I think that was the one thing I came away with from that is, you know, you've got to go out there and talk to your audience and meet them and face-to-face. That face-to-face has so much value in terms of making an impression. And I think that was the one thing I really learned from the whole thing.
What's a funny story you could share with our listeners about when you were working on the air in Fort Dodge?
Well, there were so many. A great, unique group of people. There's no doubt about it. I had an incident I will never forget. One of the employees was on to and was, I believe, trying to... I don't know what we were talking about, but at that point, a significant other had barged into the studio and basically gone to town, attacked the guy I was on the air with. So it was.
So in other words, your newsman was beaten up by his wife.
That's putting it pretty much.
On the air.
On the air. I'm sitting there talking. I'm doing the weather. I don't know what I was talking about. I'm doing the weather or something. And all of a sudden, I hear the door crash open, and here she comes, and she is on a mission, and just ragdolls the news guy. Just completely, I mean, just like picked him up like he was a stuffed animal, threw him across the room, and I'm sitting there on the air.
Yeah, female brutality became a reality.
It was, come to think of it now, I was talking about people who think they could become wrestlers. I think I'm going to send a contract her way. I've never seen anything like it before, to this day. Being on the air, it's just stuff like that. I mean, what a great story. I mean, not for him, obviously, but, we can laugh about it now years later, but just the stuff that happens on live TV. We had 2 months ago or 3 months ago, we were doing a live pay-per-view in Orlando at Universal Studios, and during the match, we open up the show sometimes with a lot of pyro and explosions, and, you know, it's like a rock concert when we open up the show, basically. And one of the pyro explosions ignited a fire above the arena. So basically, the show had gotten underway. We had a match in the ring going on live on pay-per-view, and all of a sudden the fans start pointing to the ceiling, and there is an inferno going on in the roof. And so suddenly the arena fills up with smoke. We've got to evacuate the building live on TV. And
So you're just stuck there saying, okay, what do we do now?
Well, that was one of those things where we had to treat it like a news story. And suddenly, you know, I grab a microphone and a camera crew, and we go outside the building while they're evacuating live on TV. I mean, we can't do anything. We're live. So we had to evacuate. The match finished very quickly.
Yeah, really?
We had to evacuate the arena. And suddenly we're doing I had to throw back to my reporting live outside of City Hall, and it's the kind of thing where we're watching fans leave the building, and so that's the kind of thing, it's something you never forget, and a lot of times just because of the immediacy of being on live, things will happen, you know, getting hit in the head with a bottle before you go on the air, having the news, a guy getting beaten up by his wife, while you're on the air, stuff like that. Those are the ones that really stick out for me.
And here's the final question. Where will entertainment television be in 5 years?
Ah, good question. I think entertainment television, as we know it today, in every way, shape, and form, will be dramatically transformed. And I think what you're going to see, and this is pretty far out there, and I'm a pretty big fan of this stuff, so I'd like to think I know what I'm talking about, but then there are many people who are going to go, you're completely insane. I think network television... I think channels, as we know them today, in terms of networks, broadcast channels, even to maybe a lesser extent radio, in the current way it's presented, will all be completely thrown away for direct-to-consumer broadcasting. And I think that's going to be not tomorrow, not 5 years, but I think in 10 years, I think products will, or presentations, programs will forego the way of the network and the middleman and start basically doing direct-to-consumer. I think a lot of artists will do that now. I just heard Jewel is going to dump her record label and is going to try and sell everything direct-to-consumer over her website. It just makes sense from a artist standpoint, you know, in the days now that we see that. And I think you're going to see that kind of transform itself into television shows, into movies. You're also going to have them, you know, I think we're dealing with this too with television, and our pay-per-views is come up with a way where it's ad-supported. And realizing piracy is going to get the best of everything in terms of what it's done to the music business, it will do to television, it will do to movies. And the industry is going to have to come up with a way to reinvent itself in order to maintain profitability. And it's going to have to be done in different ways. And I think that's what you're going to see over the course of time, just out of necessity to survive. And I unfortunately, I think the piracy and everything is going to affect the ability to do the larger scale movies and television shows that we see now.
So in other words, all those CDs that you used to copy when you were a kid is coming back to haunt you. Bad karma.
I think it is. It's digital karma, and we're going to see it a lot more, unfortunately. I mean, now it's just so easy to get whatever you want. The people who know how to do it, and there are more and more people who know how to do it every day, are eventually going to be the same that have to find a way to survive the very thing they're trying to steal, or try to not survive, but to let survive. You know, it's amazing how many people, you know, our pay-per-views alone, I think more people see it pirated off the internet than actually go buy it. You know, and we're just one entity. You know, I'm sure the people of producers of Lost and the producers of you know, other things are going to have to come up with a way to prevent that. But, I mean, for us, being a company that survives solely on the revenue that our pay-per-view generates, it's a real problem.
Jeremy, it's time to play Ask Bill 3. This is where I'm going to turn the microphone over to you, and you get to ask me three questions about anything. And we have not previewed these questions. Right?
Okay, I've got three relatively easy questions, but I think you can get them.
Okay.
Okay. As you mentioned before, I'm in the wrestling business. Bill Grady, have you ever used a wrestling move or know someone who has used a wrestling move in a real fight?
No, but I heard about a newsman one time that had his wife come into the studio and make a few moves on his butt.
Ah, yes. See, that. There we go. That was, I believe she applied the flying body attack.
Or maybe it was the killer swan.
It was the killer swan, and she learned that move in Japan. She did some training over there and obviously learned how to just throw news guys. It's a something to be seen. Okay. So, yes, I would say in that case, the move was used in a real fight. So, the answer to that question, I guess, Bill, would be yes, you have.
But in all honesty, I really haven't seen it in any other fights that I've witnessed. I've seen people try to box, or guys try to box, and that's not the way to fight. The way to fight somebody is like the way hockey players do it. You just grab them, and you get in as many hits as you can, as fast as you can, and you don't sit there and spar with them. So here's a guy that got into a lot of fights as a kid because I was a fat kid.
Right.
So I know how to fight. You just grab them and you put as many hits into somebody's head as quickly and as hard as you can. That's how you fight.
Okay. So what you're saying is go for it. Do not try and apply things such as the figure four leg lock. Do not try and apply things that we would use in professional wrestling to get the victory. You're saying just go for it. Go for the punches. Throw down.
Right. Don't try to box them. You have to grab them by the shirt, and you just have to hit them in the head as many times as physically possible, just like hockey players do. That's how you fight.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever seen a fight where somebody has actually used a pro wrestling move?
Several times, believe it or not. But that's just because I hang around guys who use them all the time. But, yeah, usually if a fight breaks out, you might see some novelty moves in there, and I almost say that because usually by the time our guys are done with their... our guys never pick fights. They're always picked, basically. It's usually a drunk guy at a bar who thinks he's going to impress his friends and go over and mess with the wrestlers. Usually that's how it starts. But then from there on, it's usually a few novelty... maybe a few of the punches we had mentioned before once... once the guy gets down, it's in control. Usually he might apply a wrestling move just for novelty, just to amuse the rest of us. He might put on the figure four leg lock. I've seen that before.
But there's one move that I've never seen happen in actual real life, and that is where they spin the guy toward the ropes and is like, oh, I can't stop, and then he bounces off, and oh, he comes right back him. Oh, I can't stop.
Yes. I have seen that actually before in a real fight.
No. You're pulling my groin muscle now.
Okay, all right. Maybe I haven't. But if there were ropes set up, if there were actual ropes set up in the bars, you would probably see it.
No, I don't believe it. I don't believe anybody can have that much perpetual motion. It's like, oh, I can't stop. Oh, no, and here I come right back at him, and I can't see his elbow out.
All right, I would happen to agree with you that probably wouldn't happen in a real scenario.
But it looks good in the ring.
Yep.
What's question number two?
Question number two. TNA Wrestling, the program I work for, and am featured on, is on Thursday nights. Okay?
Okay.
We are going prime time on November 16th. What is the name of the network I'm on? And, that's a two-part question. The name of the network starts, is a man's name, or could be construed as a man or a pet's name. Tell me a famous man that shares the name of the network I'm on.
Oh, that's easy. The name of the network is Spike, and a famous name would be Spike Lee.
Ah, very good, very good. Ding, ding. All right, very nice. Number two answered successfully.
Do I win any grilled meat or anything?
Do you remember the Wheel of Meat we used to do?
Yeah. That's a promotion I brought from Wisconsin. The Wheel of Meat. Spin the Wheel of Meat.
Well, remember, and that would run, it'd land on, and then we'd have a mysterious voice come from out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Roast. Remember that?
Yeah, roast. And it was, yeah. Roast.
Yes. So, yes, if you were to spin the Wheel of Meat right now, only your fortunes could, you know, with the rump roast or some other delightful spiced meat.
Roast.
Okay. Third question. I was recently, in the last year, on an episode of a show that has been canceled on the WB, which is now the CW. The show is called the Blue Collar TV Show. Who was the star of the Blue Collar TV Show?
Jeff Foxworthy.
Ah, wow, more meat for you coming your way.
Roast. Actually, I want some of that prime rib. You know, roast comes up too often.
I was going to say, they would put the roast on there like every third.
A ground chuck.
Ground chuck would get on there every third.
Ground up hot dog. Yeah, roadkill.
We didn't put that on the list, but we should have, actually, in retrospect.
And my favorite, what we killed at the transmitter site.
Yeah, there were some... There's some strange, strange animals living out there, weren't there?
But delicious meat. I mean, you talk about fresh and tangy, and you can't beat it with cheese.
I never would have guessed that was raccoon you threw on there. That was good.
That wasn't raccoon.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't want to know that.
Jeremy, do you want to tell more about your move to primetime and how our listeners can tune in? And also how they can subscribe to some of your pay-per-view items as well.
Absolutely. For those internet-savvy folks, our website is tnawrestling.com. And if you go to another very popular website that we're on is YouTube. And, in fact, we're in the top 10 producers on YouTube, meaning that our videos get we're in the top 10 most viewed videos. So we have quite a following online, and you can go to YouTube and type in TNA Wrestling or type in Jeremy Borash on YouTube. And in fact, one of the episodes that I host with a gal named Christy Hemme, who happened to grace the pages of a adult magazine called Playboy, I believe you know her, maybe. Christy Hemme is her name. She hosts the show with me. She was in Playboy last month. I haven't, or last year. I have not looked at the magazine, but I have read the articles. she hosts a show with me. That show that we host together, I think, is up to 1.5 million views, something like that. So quite a few people are checking out the show, and she's fully clothed. Don't worry. It's not anything your kids couldn't see, but it's a wrestling show, so you can check it out on YouTube. And coming up Thursday, the 16th of November, we start on primetime with Spike TV, TNA Wrestling on Spike. It starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. It's a two-hour special, and that's our kickoff to primetime. If you watch Spike TV anytime up until then, you'll see all kinds of advertising for it. They're really getting behind it. So it's a huge, huge deal for both TNA and Spike TV, and it starts on the 16th and runs every Thursday night. And our next pay-per-view is Sunday the 19th, and it's live from Orlando. It's called Genesis, and it'll feature Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle, which is a huge, they're calling it the dream match of the decade. It's a huge, huge matchup for wrestling fans. So it's coming up very soon, November 19th on pay-per-view.
Jeremy, thank you so much for being our guest this week on You Are the Guest.
A pleasure to be number 64, and whoever has to be 65, good luck following this.
If you'd like to be a guest on a future show, just go to our website at www.youaretheguest.com. Submit your first name, the town where you live, and a short description on why you'd make a good guest. There is no charge for being a guest, and you'll have the opportunity to share what you think and how the news and events from today affect your life. The show's producers will contact you by email if you're chosen for a future show.
Remember that you can listen to the show every day at Coolcast Radio. And of course, we always appreciate your subscriptions at iTunes and Yahoo Podcasts. That concludes this week's edition of You Are the Guest from the great city of Fort Dodge, Iowa. I'm Bill Grady. Thanks for listening.